I speak to Eshar Ben-Shatrit, the CEO and co-founder of Redefine Meat, an Israeli food company producing realistic plant-based meat alternatives. Eshar launched Redefine Meat in 2018 to address the environmental and ethical challenges posed by traditional meat production. His company is on the cutting edge of food technology, using advanced 3D printing techniques and proprietary formulations to mimic the taste, texture, and appearance of real meat. I'm Alex Crisp, and welcome to another episode of Future of Foods Interview. So thank you, Eshar Ben-Shatrit, for joining me on this latest episode of Future of Foods Interviews. You are the CEO of Redefine Meat, a plant-based meat company based in Israel. And coincidentally, you're based in a place called Rehovot, which when I was a young man, I was on a kibbutz in Rehovot called Kibbutz Shila. So I actually know exactly where you are. But thank you for joining me. And there's a few companies there in Rehovot working in this space, aren't there?
We call it the Silicon Valley of alternative proteins.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
Happy to be here, Alex. And it's nice that you know Rehovot, because usually people ask me and I just say we're in Tel Aviv, but we're in a suburb of Tel Aviv that is the birthplace of a lot of innovation in this space. Indeed.
Yeah, so what are the other companies that are there?
Aleph Farm, Super Meat, Future Meat started here. Oshi doing amazing plant-based salmon. Steak Powder Foods, Savory It, Amai Protein doing a sweetener that is made of proteins. And many, many, many others that I can't list now. But there's a reason. We are all attracted to one another and we help one another. And there is an ecosystem here that you can find peers. Kinoko is nearby. Equinom even is close to Chile. So this is really a hub for companies and for people. And we help each other. Rimilk, I forgot Rimilk. Rimilk really, really close by. And it is helpful when you're doing something quite unique and special and challenging, where others that you can meet for lunch are doing something similar.
Very interesting. Yeah. So why don't you just take a moment? Eshar. Am I saying your name properly? Eshar?
Eshar Ben-Shatrit, but don't Eshar. Even try.
Eshar. Okay. Why don't you just take a moment to introduce yourself and your company? How long have you been going? And also, what sets your company and your products apart from other plant-based competitors?
First, I'm 40 years old. I have three kids. I live with my wife in Nataf, a small village outside of Jerusalem. 10 years ago, I stopped eating meat and I became obsessed with this desire to go back eating meat, to find a way to eat meat without killing animals for it. At the beginning, it was a personal obsession. Then I started to become fascinated about the technology. And almost 7 years ago, I quit my job and I decided with my co-founder, Adam, that we should pursue this quest of creating high-quality meat that doesn't come from animals. Our products are indeed plant-based, but we see ourselves as a new meat company. We develop technologies that allows Redefine Meat today to create meat with a lot of complexity in the structure, texture, very rich flavors, very meaty experiences that happens to be made from plants. So we didn't start from a plant-based product, let's make it better. We started from the technology. We introduced to the world the first concept of a steak using 3D printing technology. And now we are selling that steak in more than 5 countries, and you can buy it now even in Ocado. We launch all of our product, creating a very unique range of new meat products, which was the first in the market in this category. And we started selling in restaurants over 2 years ago. Our products are found now at about 5,000 restaurants across Europe, from steaks in Michelin star restaurants to shawarma in Brixton Market, for example. And in the past year, we're also selling the range of new meat products in leading retailers in Israel and Europe. You asked a question about plant-based meat competition. We don't see plant-based meat as our competition. We see plant-based companies as peers, as people working together to change the industry. Our competition is meat. And we're trying to learn from the meat industry what they're doing well and try to replicate it with our new meat range. We try to take market share from meat products and not other plant-based meat products. And the most important thing for us is quality of our products. We really create a new standard for what is meat alternative, for what is plant-based meat. And we also bring it to places that plant-based meat was never accessible in, mainly focusing on restaurants, which our core is, we're happy to sell in retail and we see tremendous growth. But this work that we're doing with leading chefs, leading groups across Europe now to really make a dent in meat consumption is, as far as we know, we are the only company that took this as a serious strategy and pursued it and has the success that we have. And because we are quite alone in high quality food service, we also think this is just the beginning.
You were kind enough to send me a variety of your products to try, and I was very impressed. It's the first plant-based food that I have tried, and I have been pleasantly surprised by its similarity to meat, really. It's almost indistinguishable from the real thing. The burgers that I tried fooled friends of mine into believing that they were meat burgers, and the pulled pork made a delicious pulled pork stew I mean, I've stopped eating red meat, so it was a treat for me to sort of eat this and remember what meat tastes like. So I suppose this is, and also the thing I noticed was the packaging, the way you are marketing it. The packaging is a lot more like meat packaging, isn't it? It's not, because a lot of the plant-based stuff, a lot of the kind of new meat stuff, they try and make it look funky and modern and new, but I suspect this has
But
been done on
Alex,
purpose.
think about the value proposition. The value proposition of meat should not be, this is a vegan product that you're going to eat and you're going to save the planet and it's going to be very healthy. The value proposition of meat that you're going to taste something that tastes really, really good. In our case, also, you know already in your back of your head that if it will taste good and you'll enjoy eating it, it doesn't come from animals and it doesn't have cholesterol. And it's good for the planet, and you can feel that you're a part of something bigger than yourself. But the promise should be in food, the promise should be in the food, what it is and not what it is not. But then you create very high expectation that you need not to disappoint the consumer or to create a big barrier between the promise and the delivered. The pulled pork product that you tasted, which is my favorite product, is also extremely healthy. It's also extremely minimally processed, short ingredient list, high in protein, easy to cook. But it needs to taste really, really, really good for this discussion to be relevant. And this is our commitment to consumers, to our the chef partners, to all of the stakeholders. We focus on quality of meat products before anything else. And we hope that the consumer sees this even from our packaging, but this is our belief. We love meat, we celebrate meat. Just change the way it's manufactured.
So plant-based food has had quite a difficult time over the last couple of years, hasn't it? It kind of reached its peak perhaps in maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and then depends who you're talking to, but there was kind of consumers were sort of disappointed with the products on the market, and maybe that bubble burst. So do you think consumers are still enthusiastic about plant-based alternatives?
I think when you talk to founders like me that have been around before there was a hype, we see it a little bit differently. We spent time before there was this news extravaganza about plant-based meat, trying to convince people why there is place for a 3D printed vegan steak. And people told us, why did you quit your job to develop a new product for vegans? There's no market for that. So there was a lot of hype in the media. But you need to exclude the hype in the media from reality. When you talk to consumers, when you talk to retailers, when you talk to large food service operators, they have to find a solution for meat. Not necessarily plant-based meat is the solution, but the problem of meat has to be replaced by something else exists and increases. Global warming didn't change. Meat prices are increasing. Awareness of consumers is growing to the fact that you need to kill animals, you need to destroy the rainforest, and you need basically to have a very, very negative supply chain. The solution that people expected didn't materialize fast enough. The solutions that were offered to the market trying to solve this problem disappointed, first and foremost, the consumers. A lot of people, including myself, expected much more innovation in the marketplace in terms of better and new products that delivers to me. I'm a person that really wants to be in this category, that really wants to eat more and more, something that I can eat once a week. Imagine today people participating in the plant-based meat category. They can eat two, three, four plant-based burgers a year. A year. The ability to eat meat is breakfast, lunch, and dinner in your home, outside of your home, different meat types, different animal type. You can choose to eat chicken, you can choose to eat. And this didn't happen yet. It doesn't mean that it's not worthwhile to pursue this because the problem is so big and the potential impact is so big. But it also means that the challenge is really big. We worked for almost 4 years on technology before launching a product to the market. Imagine the belief that we had to have, the belief that our investor had to have, that at one day we will have a product. Then when we launched the initial product, they weren't amazing. So the belief that they will improve. And so it's a long journey to understand why meat is so complicated. Easy solutions are hard to find. Long-term commitment, I think, is even more important than it was ever. And also the fact that you had a lot of entrants to this market that had initial interest. So people bought products. And by the way, in retail, people do this. If you put a product on the retail shelf, people will buy it out of interest, out of curiosity. If you invest a lot in awareness, people will buy. It didn't achieve anything in convincing people to eat more. The second thing is, if you look at when you talk about plant-based meat, when you talk about the rise and decline, you talk about shelf space in retailers. In food service, with the exception of a lot of fast food chains, QSRs, burger places, you all know who they are, there were pilots that were stopped. Meat is not consumed only in retail and in fast food burger places. And there, the growth is big. We see the demand not only of us, of other products in the market. And in Europe, the demand is increasing. In USA, it's increasing in food service. In retail, it's stagnant. But I think that with good products like Redefine and other players in this space, you will see the growth that we have, Redefine Meat, and the growth that others have impacting the market for the next 5 years.
So who are some of your investors? You talked about kind of keeping your investors happy. You know, are there any kind of big name investors there that we might have heard of?
So our investors are some of the biggest and most important in the protein transition, alternative protein shift. We have CPT Capital. CPT Capital is a mission-driven investor trying to take animals, but mostly factory and farming, from the food supply chain. We have Hanako Ventures, who's a typical Israeli VC investing in technologies, but they also understood that they need to invest in sustainable, impactful projects like Redefine Meat. They're our first earliest investors. We have Happiness Capital, who's also investing heavily in making the planet, people, animals more happy, which is related to medicine, but also related to food. They also invested in a lot of companies in this space. These are our main investors from early days. And recently, 2 years, we have Synthesis Capital, who's a fund just for alternative protein. So replacing animals, and it can be plant-based, fermentation, cultivated. People that understand the potential of this technology category, product category, but have a 10-year outlook and not a 1-year outlook on this market and the potential, and value also impact. So of course, we need to have a great business. Of course, we need to make money. But the fact that we deliver something that is sustainable, kind, very different than what meat is today, is a value that they can invest in.
Yeah. Yes. It's interesting. You were talking earlier about the media, how I suppose the power of the media over perception in a way. And you know, and you mentioned that your food is quite low processed. The pulled pork you mentioned was pretty low processing. And the media, in many ways, has used the term ultra-processed foods to try and, or it has been used by some media outlets to categorize vegan or plant-based foods as harmful in some way. So, is there any? I mean, what do you think can be done about that? I mean, is that just about kind of presenting an alternative, good, healthy food, and just to keep going until people get the message? Or is there a kind of positive media spin that needs to be created?
I think first, the most important element is not to oversimplify stuff, because when you say meat and when you say plant-based meat, you bundle so many things that doesn't have anything in common. When I used to eat meat, I used to go to my butcher and buy a great ribeye steak that I knew where the cow was grazed. That's meat. And also a chicken nugget that you buy in Israel that can contain 7% chicken to be called chicken nuggets is meat. And when you look at plant-based meat, looking at the redefined meat steak that you eat in a Michelin star restaurant in Amsterdam, like Ron Gastrobar, and looking at a chicken nugget that you sell in McDonald's as a replacement, you cannot call this plant-based meat. So first, as a category, we believe that people, consumers, do something that is called occasion-based nutrition values. When you eat, Alex, a sausage, and when you eat a steak, when you eat at home and when you're eating at a carnival, your requirement of what is healthy is different. We don't think that plant-based meat should be different. Plant-based meat, if it's a sausage that replaces a street food sausage, it can have some fat, it can have some salt. It will still be less fatty and less salty than the equivalent for meat, but it will be less processed than the equivalent for meat. And when our steak is in Ocado, our steak needs to be with the same quality of ingredients, with the same quality of nutrition, with less processing comparing to a steak. Now, ultra processed food that people eat is not good for them. Usually, ultra processing involves feeding you, convincing you or your kids, my kids, to eat something with no nutrition that is very cheap, big food companies to produce by adding a lot of salt, adding a lot of sugar, adding a lot of fat, giving you empty calories and making you addicted. Plant-based meat wants to convince you to eat something that is healthy for you. You know, soy protein is healthy for you, to eat some fibers, to eat no cholesterol, and to provide a rich product by processing. It's very, very different. We don't put sugar. So most of ultra-processed food has a lot of sugar or a lot of salt. We don't have sugar. Most of ultra-processed food is empty calories. We provide you with, in our steak, in 25% of protein, in our pool, 21%. So you need to understand that ultra processing is a problem in most foods that are consumed that are ultra processed. This entire thing is not relevant for plant-based meat. Salt content is relevant for plant-based meat. We need, as an industry, to make sure that we don't hide off flavors and bad ingredients with a lot of salt. But you need to know how to do it. We need to find a way to take our products and make them better and better in terms of nutrition. But if you stack any redefined meat products versus the animal equivalent, we are more healthy. Every nutritionist will tell you we're more healthy. If you stack us against kale or lentils, of course, we have saturated fat and kale doesn't have saturated fat. But take our German sausage. Our German sausage, I think, will have the lowest Nutri-Score in our product. It still will have half the saturated fat and half the salt of a German sausage. But on the steak and the pool, the steak and the pool are very premium. They're also very expensive. I don't know if when you can look at Ocado, they're more expensive. We can allow for better quality ingredients and less processing because it's a high value product. If Redefine would have to focus on chicken nuggets and cheaper product, it's tough to find high quality protein. It's tough to find natural flavors that work instead of just adding more salt. So there is a fine balance, but definitely the media is very much confusing real nutrition, real ultra processing with headlines. But some consumers do the same. Some consumers say this is processed, so it's not healthy. They don't look at what is the product that they're eating and what did the process do, perhaps even to increase the nutritional availability of things like protein or fibers. But it's a complicated journey. I think consumers understand it, actually. Consumers understand that they need to look at the nutritional composition and not just say processed versus not processed.
Yeah, so this is how you get the this is how you get the taste that consumers want, because you are adding ingredients into there that plant-based foods usually perhaps avoid, like the fats and things like that. So what does sort of set, I mean, how do you create your products? How do you get that taste? How do you get that meaty taste?
We have a fundamental approach that is also embedded in our technology and our patents that we don't start with the product. You even mentioned, and it's very common in the language, in the semantics, to think about the product. Redefine it starts with a component. We follow meat in the understanding that meat is comprised of different elements that the cow basically put together for us. So our entire processing and technology is based on the creation separately of muscle, fat, and blood. And we added in the recent years also connective tissue. So when you eat our burger or when you eat our pulled, that you bo ate both of them, it's different structures and combination of muscle, fat, and blood. You see them as different products, right? They are different products. But in terms of our technology, they're manifestation of different variations of the same ingredients. And this is very unique to Redefine Meat. This is also the fact that we can create a steak, because a steak you cannot create by saying, let's take these ingredients and mix them all together. You need to think about how the fiber will be created. And then you have the fibers, but then you need to think how you're going to trap the fat in the fibers and how you're going to connect the blood to that. And it allows us to use different ingredients that were never used before. It allows us to use 3D printing or additive manufacturing that was never used before, because basically we first had the ink and then we had the printer. And it also allows Redefine Meat to create sensations in your mouth that are not found in other food products that you know outside of meat. So they're not found in any food, in chocolate and bakery. They're not found in plant-based meat. They are found in meat. Why is that? Because the structure of meat creates not only a texture and flavor, but also a flavor delivery mechanism that is referred to as mouthfeel, this combination of texture, flavor, and flavor delivery. And we are able to create this mouthfeel. And it's very simple. When you bite through a burger, you have the texture of mostly the muscle. You feel it. You feel the texture, the bounciness, the graininess, but we have different liquid coming out in your mouth. One is the blood, this is water with protein. One is the fat. They have different speeds in which they cover your palate, and each of them delivers to your palate different flavors. So you have a sensation, maybe it's not the best burger you ever had, but you say, okay, this reminds to my brain eating an animal-based burger. And of course, when you eat the steak, that unfortunately you didn't get the steak, so and we have the steak in the UK. You say, I'm ripping through fibers of muscle and I'm releasing into my mouth a liquid that is like blood and has the flavor of blood. And then the fat covers your palate and the flavor lingers.
Interesting, interesting. So you create a steak as well that has that has the texture and has the sort of mouthfeel of eating a steak.
Yes, when we started, steak was considered the holy grail. A lot of companies refer to it as moonshot. When we talk with the big food companies, we ask them, why isn't there a plant-based steak? They said, because there's no technology to create a plant-based steak. And we started working on that, and people told us the steak is impossible. So it's very difficult to create such a complicated food product. We developed a steak, and we launched it into the market, and we scaled it. And our steak is sold in restaurants across Europe, and 5 months ago almost, we launched it also for retail consumer. Small amount, so not as big as our other products, but Ocado is selling our flank in the UK. They're really happy. It's rated higher than the steaks from meat. We sell it in retail in Israel. We sell it in retail in Germany and in the Netherlands, of course. And every month we produce more and more steak and we make the steaks more available while continuing to improve the steak, the texture, the flavor. But yes, we're really happy with Ocado, especially just to see the reaction and the repeat purchase and how people make a steak at home and they put it online. But Luce, which is a very traditional steakhouse chain in the Netherlands, have our steak for over a year now. In London, I know that the Le Petit Beef Bar, some months sell more redefined meat steak than the animal-based steak. So you can see it in a lot of places.
Yeah. Well, I will have to see if I can find one of those because I am encouraged by the other products to seek it out. So, and the other thing you were saying is 3D printing. So you can 3D print your product or your steak, or which products can you 3D print? How does that work? How does that work? Because I'm not especially kind of clued up on how the kind of food 3D printing works.
You can print any of our products. You can eat. You can print a burger, but you don't need it. So once you have the ability to make a burger, there is no reason to repeat it again and again in a 3D printer, because the complex structure and the three-dimensional arrangement of component is not so critical in a burger. In a steak, you have to 3D print a steak. There is no way to produce a steak in our definition of a steak. Steak has a lot of definition. We actually define what is a steak and what isn't a steak. You cannot create a steak without 3D printing. So if you come to our lab, Alex, in Israel, we will take one of our old 3D printers that we use for experiments, and we will print a steak for you. Like you imagine a 3D printed steak. In our case, it's more complicated because we print muscle, fat, and blood separately. So it's an ability to show the value of 3D printing in creating a steak for you. The products that we produce and we sell in the market are a generation of additive manufacturing technology. So the same principle of 3D printing, the same process we use in a lab, only applied to higher scale food production. So our printer in the lab will print 1 kilogram of a steak in 1 hour. This is, of course, is not scalable. It's very difficult to clean. We spent a lot of our technology, by the way, also a lot of our IP, in how you make this idea, this original idea of using 3D printing to create a steak, in order to have a machine like we have in our factory in the Netherlands that creates steaks in an industrial scale, in a safe way, in a controlled environment. But in order to create this structure that has fibers that are quite aligned and traps within them muscle, fat, and connective tissue, you need to build the product layer by layer. You cannot just throw everything to the bin and hope that steak will come out. Right. So we need this three-dimensional orientation and arrangement. And this is what happens in an animal's body. So the movement of the animal basically creates this arrangement of fibers covered by connective tissue. And the need to maintain energy for desperate times create these fat pockets inside. And the needing to get oxygen to that creates the blood and the myoglobin inside. So we recreate that with what people refer to as 3D printing. We call it additive manufacturing because it's not small scale, lab scale gimmick. It's a machine that we produce food and, again, already sold in retail across Europe. So way past this proof of concept stage.
Do you have you got kind of video footage of the of it being printed, of the food being printed?
Yes, we have a lot. It's all online. It's not something new, and we have a lot of different variations from the different stages of the company. In the first few years, we didn't want to show it because we filed for patents. But now in our patents, you can actually read our first patent that describe what I'm saying here: muscle, fat, and blood, using a simple 3D printer, then scaling it up. This is from 2019, the first patent. Mm. Of course, we also have patents that are showing what is the process of taking this module, this core technology of additive manufacturing, and placing it on a food system, automatic movement kind of production equipment so we can produce and package in a way that allows us to sell more and to get our product more accessible to consumers.
Okay. So are you looking at I'm not sure what fats and things you use, but are you looking at perhaps using sort of precision fermented sort of animal fats in the future to kind of get that added sort of meaty taste? Is that something you're thinking about?
If you ask, we always ask ourselves, what are the big questions that are not answered yet? One of the two biggest questions is relating, one is related to flavor, how you can create this really, really meaty flavor that still has, we have a gap and the industry has a gap to close. And the second is actually fat. If you think about plant-based protein, right? People call it plant-based protein. Meat has more fat than protein. And the reason that meat is tasty and the reason that we love meat is a lot related to the fat, where actually there's not a lot of innovation in fat. And we think that in fat and in flavors, plant-based meat can do a lot. Plant-based ingredients can improve, but actually precision fermentation to create a specific fat or a specific flavor molecule is one of the most exciting things we'll see in the future. Because redefining, we're not an ingredient manufacturer. We convert the ingredients into meat using our technology. We can work with a lot of suppliers and startups in those fields. We offer them a lot of feedback, and we also offer them the opportunity to incorporate their ingredient in a steak. So it's very exciting, and I'm sure this is going to be one of the breakthroughs of these industries. By the way, a few exciting startups in the UK working on fat or lipids. There is one company that I'm now really a huge fan of. It's called Savor from the USA. They just came with incredible fats, and it's backed by Synthesis Capital and Bill Gates. Just incredible fats that can replace animal fat, and there's a lot of other examples. And the precision fermentation, there's a lot of exciting stuff going on in dairy protein. But like dairy protein is produced, also other mammal protein can be produced in the near future. Our main challenge is we like to be in the market. We like to feed tens of thousands of people with our products every day. And then you get a lot of insight on your development. So things that are genetically modified or things that are novel food, we can use them in the lab. But until you place something in a restaurant in the UK for 1 year, it's very hard to create the insight for the next step. So in our products today, we focus on things that if we improve, we can bring to the market within 3 months at scale.
Okay. So what is your opinion of cell cultivated meat? You know, working in the plant-based markets, is there going to be competition between you and them, or is it just completely it's completely kind of two strands of the same thing?
I wish, imagine that we will be in a stage that the consumer will go to the shelf and can decide or can compete within our steak and a cultivated steak. I think first, every technology is relevant and exciting. We started off with a very outlandish, childish vision of technology. And I meet people that told me, you will never have a steak. And I tell them, you can buy the steak in Victory, in your neighborhood retail chain in Israel. So you cannot exclude anything. One of the most difficult things you realize about food, that at the end of the day, food is food. Food is not technology. At the end of the day, what matters is not the 3D printing or the fermentation or the bioreactor, is what you can put in somebody's mouth. And until you have products that you put in people's mouth, you don't know what is the solution. And for me, cultivated strategies or growing cells are really exciting. We look into that a lot, but it's still in the science phase. So the question of scale up, regulation, consumer perception, competition is so far ahead, where the fundamental question of where, what cell will provide a game-changing value for the consumer, this is something that needs to be answered. And I think it will be answered in the coming 3, 4, 5 years. Then, when we understand what cells we need to add to our products to make them more tasty or more healthy or more convenient, then we'll worry about the scale up and regulation. I expected this to happen faster. So, when we started, our CTO did his PhD on growing cells of cows. So, one of the reasons he joined because he has experience. We had a few projects internally to work on that. We understood that the impact on the market is what we should focus on. And we let other great companies try to answer this question. But competition in the market, let's say optimistically, and I'm optimistic, I want it to happen, is 5 years from now, because more consumers. So we know when our product is on a menu of a restaurant, people will buy it. When there is what you call competition, where there is another option, people will buy more of our product. Why? Because then you have a choice. Today, when you have one choice, you say, I won't take this plant-based meat option. It's like in wine. It's like, in wine, you have to have multiple options, and then you can drive the consumer to do. So we need more options on the space. When we talk with retailers, they say, guys, we want to give you more shelf space as a category, but there's not a lot of offering. If you had more product, we would give you more shelf space as a category. But let's say optimistically, 5 years until we have some of our revenue go to some cultivated meat product. And then we can do it. We can also incorporate cultivated or cells in our products.
I suppose where you are based there in Rehovot, you have Aleph Farms right next door to you, and they've had regulatory approval to sell in Israel, but I assume that their product perhaps isn't quite ready yet to go anyway.
I think what I love about Aleph Farm is if you think about their strategy, cultivated meat is difficult, right? Regulation, cost, it's a big, big scientific challenge. At least do it on a steak. At least do it on something that is high-end. So I think that pursuing high-quality products that people will be willing to pay more, that the market will be more excited is what they're doing. And I think in terms of their ability to show they have a product, they're one of the most advanced in the world. They have regulatory approval. And I expect them to have some demonstrations in restaurants even this year. So it's exciting. And for me, because I grew up in a dairy farm, my mother was a dairy farmer. I'm very close to cows. So for me, again, I don't eat chicken, and I think chicken is bad to kill animals, but I want people to stop eating cows. So I'm also very much aligned with the founder and the team there on that.
Yes, I also grew up on a dairy farm. My father was he was a cowman on a farm. Yes. I have a similar kind of drive, I suppose. So is that your main drive to creating this company then, to kind of save the cows and sort of save the farm animals?
So, Alec, I don't know about you, but when I was a child, the farm, the dairy farm, and it's an industrial dairy farm, it's not the cows grazing in the nature, was a romantic place. I thought we have animals and they're beautiful and they have small calves and you can play with them. And it's a magical thing. You take milk out of them and they're in pain, so you help them. Now, as an adult, having kids, it's a terrible place. It's really one of the most worst places around the world. And for example, when you grow in a dairy farm, you get used to the smell. But my wife, whenever we come close to that specific dairy farm, she tells me, how can you stand here and eat? So for me, the number one motivation is the fact that I would really like us to kill less animals. I really think this is something that somebody, my kids, my grandkids, will look and say it was completely wrong. But the second is that I saw myself for 30 years as a person who's obsessed with meat. If you would ask me what is my hobby, I would say my hobby is making a steak. So the number one motivation is for me to go back eating and cooking for the people I love meat like I used to. Now I can do it. So now I do it a lot. It's still not to the extent that I have a barbecue with my family and I have a ribeye and a skirt steak and lamb chop. This is the real motivation. But once I understood that there's also the environmental problem, it wasn't my motivation at all. My motivation was not killing animals and enjoying the steak. But once you understand what is happening to this planet, that it's a real problem, it's not like, no, we care about the planet, we're activists. It's something that somebody needs to solve, and then it ticks all the box. It's something personally interesting for me. I think from a moral perspective, it's really critical. From a sustainability perspective, we can't avoid that. And you can also create amazing technology and amazing businesses out of that. So it's better than my past job was great, but it was technology that I didn't care about in a market that I wasn't passionate about. So what can be better than that? It's really tough. It's food, it's technology. There was a hype and now there's less of a hype. But personally, this is what I convinced myself I was born to do.
So you say that your product is quite a high value product. I mean, I didn't see how much the products cost on Ocado, but are you planning to bring the price down to appeal to a broader market?
100%. In food, it's very easy. The more you make, the cheaper it is to produce. And the more you make your product affordable, the more people try it. But the real challenge is how you scale and you make the product available for something that people want. So we know that today we still need to improve flavor and texture. And of course, once you improve flavor and texture, more people buy your product, and then you can produce more and reduce the price. Definitely, price parity with animal meat is what needs to happen. But first, you need to have quality parity. So just taking, we can take our products today and make them a lot cheaper. It's possible, but they will either taste worse or will be less healthy. So we rather believe in our products, keep them at a high price. You buy our steak, you pay as much as you would pay for an animal steak, not more. You buy our pulled meat, you will pay the price if you compound the cooking and the time of animal meat. But at some point of time, our product will be cheaper. But remember, we invest a lot in technology. It's not that we say we rebranded an existing product and we just need to scale it. We need to develop the technologies that will deliver scale for our steaks. So it's a long journey, but it's one of the factors that we are driving. Until we had the right unit economics, we didn't offer our products in retail because the price that restaurants were willing to pay and are willing to charge consumers is not something that we believed consumers would be willing to pay. Because I don't know about you, Alex, but how much you trust your cooking ability. Chefs trust their cooking ability, and people are happy to pay chefs for a good quality steak. So when we launched in Ocado, we had a price point for all of our products for food service and retail that is another step in this journey. But still, I really think that price is not a challenge today. It's not about price. I ask people a lot, do you eat meat, Alex?
I eat meat sometimes, but I eat very little.
So ask a meat eater, I love this question. Ask a meat eater, if you would get a lifetime supply for free of plant-based meat, would you consume plant-based meat? And they would say no. So for them, it's not about price. Because if it's free, it's not. I ask restaurants sometimes, ask them, if you would take your existing plant-based meat product and give it to consumers for free, how many more will buy it? And they say, not actually not quite a lot. It's not going to even double because it's not the price. The limitation is taste and texture, you said it, and then health. Once you have something, so people try a product, then they say, okay, it's good or bad for me. First, is it tasty? Then is it healthy? Then they say, am I going to buy it again and again? So only when somebody is ready to buy something again and put something as a part of their diet, they need to worry about price. So I don't know if you buy premium cheese, you buy premium chocolate. They're much more expensive than plant-based meat. Much more expensive. But they provide a value. When you buy ice cream, it's in many cases per gram much more expensive.
It's kind of a state of mind, isn't it? Whether you're going to pay more for plant-based or not. And it's a case of trust as well. And I suppose this is what we were talking about earlier. I mean, if you go into a supermarket in the UK, they often have kind of reduced items of foods that haven't sold before their sell-by date. And quite often it's filled with plant-based foods that haven't been bought in time.
I'll tell you, Alex, there's another challenge. You talked about trust. In food, we really need trust because people are putting our products inside their body. Imagine how close it is. One of the challenges that we see when you reach a certain level of success, when you have products in the market, as I'm not coming from the food industry. So a lot of people will tell you, okay, now you need to focus on making your product cheaper. The consumers will not tell the difference if you will switch this quality protein to that quality protein. You will lower the flavor profile. You will it's a trick that big food companies do. You'll add more water to your product. You'll add more air to your product. In our industry, we're just building the trust. So whenever we bring a new product to the market, it has to be better from the perception of the consumer And not from our perspective. From our perspective, maybe to make it cheaper, maybe to make it more scalable. The consumer, we are building trust with them. And we want people to understand that this is our commitment. If you will buy our product again and again and again, they will only become better. And for many companies like Redefine Meat, when you're a technology company for a few years and then you become a food company, you need to work really hard to maintain this commitment with the consumer. And we see it with a lot of brands, we see it with a lot of product. That suddenly consumers are saying, what happened to this product? I used to love this product, but now the taste changed. We are not at all at the stage. And you know, it even happened to Coca-Cola when they changed the recipe. So we are really, really building trust. Our quality standards are something that food traditional food companies, they don't employ so much quality standards. We want our products to be safe. We want our supply chain to be meticulously with zero risk, even though we have much less risk than meat. But we want the consumers, the chefs first, and now the consumers to say, this is a brand that I want to go with into a journey. And they're going to surprise me, they're going to amaze me, and they're not going to disappoint me.
Well, I'd like to I've got one more question for you, Ashar. Thank you for coming on the Future Foods podcast, and we'll just finish with with a prediction. I mean, do you think how soon do you think it'll be that we will see redefined products on the supermarket shelves that at a value kind of parity to what consumers will be happy to pay? When do you think that'll happen?
For Redefined Meat, 2025 is the tipping point year. We will be a 7-year-old company working on technology, working on making great products, bringing them to restaurants, working on scale. In the past 3 months, we started to deploy our products to physical, to brick and mortar chains in Europe, already in the Netherlands, in Germany, coming soon in the UK. By the end of next year, we aim to have what we call full availability in retail in Europe, in UK, Germany, and the Netherlands, not only of our minced range and pulled range, but also of the steak. So it's not so far away from what people think, but a little over a year is a long time in a company's journey.
I just want to actually have one more question. It's just out of my own personal interest, this one, because you said earlier that you can't sell the pulled pork products in Israel. I mean, I don't quite understand that, because it's not actually pig, is it? It's a plant-based pig. So what is the problem with selling it there in Israel? Is it just the idea of it kind of mocking?
All of our products are plant-based, are vegan, and are kosher, right? It's easy. It's easy. There's no reason for them not to be. Pork is unique because pork can be plant-based, can be vegan, can be kosher, but you cannot call it pork. And because Israel is not a market that people eat a lot of pork, and introducing a pork is not the most important element for us, but also introducing a product that is pork that you call in a different name is not so important. We rather not sell it in Israel. The reason is quite surprising. People don't understand what is the reason. So you will need to have a rabbi giving a kosher certificate for a pork product. Theoretically, we can sell our products today. So that we already have the certificate. But who will be the maverick that will put their own stamp on a pork product? No one. And the reason is that there is something that is called a slippery slope. A lot of people in my family, my sister never had pork in her life. She never considered eating pork. She would try a Redefined Meat pork and she would say, this pork tastes great. Maybe I should go and try the real thing. That's the reason.
No, I get that.
But we sell the products that the market wants. So we don't look at what great product can Redefined Meat bring to the market. We ask what is successful in the local meat market that we can replace. And we don't have, there's no market in Israel for pulled pork products. So we don't want to replace that. In the UK, there is. In Germany, there is. In the Netherlands, there is. And we're happy with that. And it's the right thing to sell localized meat products because that's what the meat industry does. Meat is not the same. UK meat and Israeli meat are completely different. So new meat is also slightly different in each market.
Okay, well, that was yes, I understand that. It's kind of political, it's sort of social, it's lots of reasons. I understand. And I know Israel actually does produce a lot of pork, but they just don't kind of eat it in Israel. That's
In
if I
Israel,
understand right.
it's illegal to import pork to Israel. So there is some consumption. We have a lot of Jewish people that eat pork. We have a lot of Christians in Israel that eat pork. So all the consumption is produced locally. You cannot import pork to Israel. This is illegal.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time, and I'm going to be watching with great interest the progress of Redefine Meats. And thank you for letting me try your products.
Thank you, Alex. Thanks for the opportunity and the interesting conversation.